Well, good morning, everybody. I guess if you were watching Judy's Music and Community Time live stream, you may now conclude that I am feeling what she called punchy, because as soon as I kind of got it sorted, I just jumped right in and got going, because that's what I feel like doing. I want to get going. Maybe not an uncommon feeling these days, a sensation of wanting to get going just about anywhere other than right here. I'm finding it intriguing how sort of categorically restless I feel, having been told that I need to now, stay home. In any case, it is good to be with you. And I'm grateful. I was setting up the equipment this morning, and normally, if we were when do we stop using the word normally for what was before COVID? Hey, anyway, normally, when we were gathering at Creative, I would come in early and start setting up equipment. And that was sort of part of the ritual. It's interesting how when we want to engage with something that's mysterious to us, whether that's connecting with someone at a deeper level than just the kind of the blah blah of the details, or whether it's something spiritual, something we would use that kind of language for, something about God if we're using God language for spirit. Whatever it is, but the things that are kind of mysterious, it's like if we want to engage with those things, one of the things that really helps us as humans to kind of get there, if you will, is ritual. And that was one of my rituals. Was coming in early. The space was empty. There was nobody there. Maybe one of the people who lived in one of the, illegally lived in one of their offices up there. But generally, the floor was empty at Creative, and I would sort of have this quiet space in which I could do the work of preparation, and not the thinking work. That's really important to me as well. But I do that during the week. I like to kind of have that perking earlier in the week and not leave it till the last minute. But the actual physical work of preparing a space, of preparing for our bodies as well as our minds and our spirits to be together. And as I was sort of setting up equipment this morning, I was thinking that it was still a ritual. It still got some similarities week over week. It feels preparatory. But what was missing was the preparation to be together as bodies. And I missed that. The sentence that zipped through my head was, I miss our bodies being together, which of course in our culture is a sort of sense that somebody might be inclined to almost immediately or instinctively sexualize, and that's not what I'm talking about. I'm talking about our full humanness. I miss us physically gathering, and that's a real part of the mystery of being a community. So the ritual reminded me, and it deepened the missing. And sitting here looking at the bright light that says that's your camera reminds me to be grateful that we are able to be together in mind and spirit, even when we can't be together in body. And I just think that is hugely important. And if we didn't think it was important before, because sometimes being together as bodies can kind of blunt being together as minds and spirits, if you will. It can also open into it, but it can also kind of get in the way. All of our body stuff can be pretty demanding and pretty occupying, and we can kind of just skip over the other stuff sometimes or ignore it unless we stop and pay attention. So in some ways, perhaps one of the gifts in all of this is that if we want to have a sense of together, we have to do some kind of extra work. We have to pay attention to that realm, those realms. I'm glad we get to do this way. And I miss being able to be together in the ways that we are able to pre-COVID. And I look forward to doing those again. I really do. So, Welcome, and it's good to be with you. Let's pause for a land acknowledgement. This is not boilerplate to me, and if I ever skip it on a Sunday morning, it's because that morning it felt like it would be boilerplate, and my commitment to myself is to not do this in that way. And this morning, what I was thinking is that we're going to be exploring some ideas that are related to the problem that these days is often just defined as polarization, sort of this one-word definition of a large, complicated thing, but a helpful word in the sense that it gestures toward black and white, north and south, polarization, opposites. And so we're going to be exploring that a bit more. And just in case we're feeling inclined to have a little, you know, we're better at this than our southern neighbors moment, that is better at not being polarized than our southern neighbors moment, it's probably a good idea to recall that we've got some pretty huge divides right here at home. We've got polarizing things right in our front yard. And I want to do my best to keep some of those in view. Not because we don't have enough challenges. We had challenge aplenty, it seems like these days. But because in the middle of the authentic urgency of dealing with a pandemic, it's easy for the big projects like racial justice or equality to get sidelined. And that's not a good idea. And it's not a good idea because it legitimizes putting to the side not just an issue, but people. And it can kind of soothe us or make us complacent about something we need to not be complacent about. And the other thing is, these are the kind of projects that have a long, long curve. They just do. I think Martin Luther King kind of nailed it when he said that the arc of history bends toward justice, the long arc of history bends toward justice. The long often gets left out of the quote, but it's a really important part of the idea. And so we need to not set aside the big projects because we're dealing with something urgent. That would be a mistake. It would also be a mistake to think we can keep everything, you know, on 11 all the time. We can't. And so this is maybe just a way to kind of dip back into a big project, to be reminded that it's there, it's not going away, it affects our kin. For my part, I am grateful for the ongoing welcome to live and to work and to love and to be loved on Treaty One land. I want to take a few moments to breathe together. And you know, I was thinking about this morning as well, and just thinking that when it comes to our breathing together, I am more and more convinced of the importance of these kinds of practices in my life and in our lives. They're profoundly effective in helping us deal with any number of things and reminding us of things and opening us to things that are very, very important for our mental and spiritual and physical well-being. And so if we start to breathe together and you feel like what you need to do is just keep breathing, you need to just stay in that space, I just put your phone face down and turn it off. Do whatever, like just keep breathing, just go into that space and stay there. And if this helps you kind of, as it does me, kind of settle and feel a sense of being more present to what's going on in the moment and in this space that's shared, then I think it will have served us well. What we're going to do this morning in terms of our breathing together is just the simplest thing that we do, which is three rounds of square breathing in for a slow count of three through your nose. Take it slow. This is important. This is important to our bodies as well as our minds and spirits, that we breathe in slowly. Cradle your breath for a count of three, and then breathe it all the way out. As I've said many times, for me that's a count of six, but it doesn't have to be a count. Just make sure your breath goes all the way out. We'll do that circle. I just called it a square, didn't I? Now I called it a circle. Make it whatever shape you want. We'll go around that cycle three times, and then we'll carry on. If you want to feel more of a sense of body and mind and spirit connecting, you can put your hands on your legs and just kind of put one finger, press down on one finger at a time as you go through each breath. So you press down on three fingers by the time you're done, and just be aware of the sensation of your hands and your fingers pressing into your legs one at a time. All right. Oh, one other thing I wanted to say. Sorry, there's so much preamble, but we kind of need to set this up if we're going to share it. If you're listening to this in the podcast, just be aware that I shorten this in the edit, and I do that so that you can hit pause and breathe as long as you want, and then just hit play again and carry on with the talky bit. All right, enough talky. Let's just breathe the breath of life together. Here we go. Peace. Thank you. Well, I have been noticing a personal tendency, and I'm wondering if it's more common than that. I've been avoiding talking about politics, except where I'm pretty sure that I'm on a similar page with the rest of the folks in the conversation. I don't feel like I'm scared about it. It's an interesting sensation. It's more just like the way these conversations are often being conducted in the public square or in shared spaces feels to me like just a massive waste of time and perfectly good oxygen. It feels like kind of like a, you know, if you want to yell at one another like petulant 7-year-olds in an unsupervised recess, go ahead, but just, you know, just don't drag me into it. That's sort of what it, kind of the image that comes to mind inside of me sometimes. And yet there is something sort of perking away underneath that choice to not speak of those things or to dance around them that won't sit easy with me. And I know that part of that comes from my own religious history. It comes from growing up surrounded by the idea, which is, in my experience, rooted in the collected sayings of Jesus in the Gospel of Matthew, that we should love our enemies, that we should bless those who curse us, we should do good to those who hate us. I'm not sure if it's the King James, but the translation that lives most vividly in my head says that we should do good to those who despitefully use us. Which feels like better poetics than hate us, but nevertheless. And we should pray for those that mistreat or persecute us. For me, these feel like really important ideas, and none of them feel like the ones that I'm surrounded by these days. I'm still working on sorting this through. I'm working to try to find language around these kinds of issues that I feel like I can live with for myself, and that also touches on those larger realities that I'm seeing all around me, not least of all when it comes to politics. And maybe I always will be sorting that through. Maybe this is just an ongoing search. I'm not sure. In lots of ways, I feel about politics like I often feel about religion. Like I value the more that the practice of politics or the practice of religion should help us to explore and to debate and to attempt to enact or to engage with. So I value that. I want that. I want more of that more. But I'm just mostly fed up with or disenchanted with or maybe just even bored with the way these things are often conducted, at least in public forums. But again, that sense that this intersection matters to both our present and our future as individual people, as nations, as a species, that sensation just won't sit down and shut up inside of me. And so when that happens, I go exploring. So I'm on a bit of a personal quest to see if I can find some ways of thinking about how what we believe or contemplate about the big mysteries impacts the ways we approach our intersections of difference in realms that range from the deeply personal an individual to the big collective ones, you know, things like cultural things like religion and politics. Some of the reasons why this is all getting under my skin right at the moment, right now, you know, feel kind of obvious. We've just been through, are we actually through? at a distance, but we've actually just been through the American elections. And on our Wednesday evening hangout this past week, we spent a bit of time talking about what it was like for different people in that hang to follow these events via broadcast news media. By the way, if you haven't been to one of those Zoom drop-ins, I would really encourage you to do so if you're able. They are very laid back. I'm hosting them with no agenda other than to provide us with an opportunity to see one another's faces and talk about whatever's kind of comes up. So we're really just kind of out for coffee or lunch together and shooting the breeze, as my grandfather would have said. And anyway, this past week, among the things we were discussing was how during this long pause in the election broadcasting, where the votes were being counted in separate cities and states late in the election, there was kind of this long period where the results weren't changing. But the commentators kept talking and talking and talking all night. They kept talking. And some of the folks who were dropping in and out of those broadcasts said it felt like they were talking about nothing, just to keep the, you know, keep the media machine rolling. And as we were having that conversation, what came to mind was a lyric in a Sting song that I remember being very struck by way back in the early 90s when this song came out, in which he sings of politicians and says, "They all seem like game show hosts to me." I don't think he was trying to be prescient, but game show hosts sometimes feels less and less, you know, seems like these days, and more like is. You know, it's interesting to me that, I mean, that could sound like just full-blown cynicism. It's interesting to me that the song that lyric is from is, in the end, a hopeful song. But it sure doesn't sound that way at the start. So listen to this. These are the lyrics from, some of the lyrics from that tune. "You could say I lost my faith in science and progress. You could say I lost my belief in the Holy Church. You could say I lost my sense of direction. You could say all of this and worse, but what?" Little pause right there, because, see what I mean? That's not exactly hopeful, right? Anyway, second verse, much like the first, but a little bit louder and a little bit worse. Where is that rhyme from? Anyway, here's the second verse. "Some would say I was a lost man in a lost world. You could say I lost my faith in the people on TV. You could say I lost my belief in our politicians. They all seem like game show hosts to me." And the third verse seems determined to not leave very many stones unturned. "I never saw no miracle of science that didn't go from a blessing to a curse. I never saw no military solution that didn't always end up as something worse." The hope, not surprisingly, resides in the chorus. Some of us are already singing this part inside our heads, and we're getting annoyed with me for leaving it so long. You know who you are. But here's the chorus. "But if I ever lose my faith in you," right? "There'll be nothing left for me to do." And the bridge brings it home. "I could be lost inside their lies without a trace. But every time I close my eyes, I see your face. If I ever lose my faith in you, there'd be nothing left for me to do." I thought Sting was going to fall right into a pit of nihilistic despair there for a moment. Not that he's so inclined. By the way, if you ever want to spend a few minutes just absolutely tripping out on an early 90s music video that combines the enormous production budgets that were made possible by MTV with over-the-top visual excesses that were the natural sort of outcome of the growing field of digital special effects, and also the imagery of somebody who's read, you know, a few too many classics, all you got to do is just go watch the original music video for Sting's "If I Ever Lose My Faith in You." Just wow. Just wow. Anyway, thanks for indulging me. Hang in there. I am actually going somewhere with all of this. So, as Sting has mentioned in some interviews about the song, it starts out with an intro, a musical intro, that includes the musical interval of a flat fifth, Some of you won't have a clue what I'm talking about. Some of you will totally get this. It's called a tritone these days, but it was banned. That interval, that distance between two notes, was banned by the Pope in the Middle Ages as being from the devil, because it is dissonant, which means that to our Western trained ears, it makes you uncomfortable because it's unresolved. And that's an important piece of what we're exploring this morning. If you study music theory, you will learn that it's still, that interval still has a Latin name that reflects that piece of its history. It's Diabolus in Musica, the devil in music, or the devil's interval. And not surprisingly, it forms the basis for the blues, which of course form the basis for rock and so on. It's probably best we don't get started down the path of why someone might think that it's a problem if religion makes us uncomfortable or presents dissonant ideas. There's just a huge chunk of the history of Christianity that this idea opens into, that anyway, all the things that didn't get included, for example, in the collection that we now think of as the Bible, many of which were consciously rejected in the early years of Christianity, because the people with the power said, and they've said this in writing, that those writings would have made people uncomfortable. They were dissonant. Anyway, sorry, got distracted. Squirrel, you know, but I'm back. So about the lyrics and this matter of hope, Sting has said that he deliberately never says who you is in the song. The you, if I ever lose my hope, my faith in you, rather, the you, he says, in If I Ever Lose My Faith in You, could be, quote, my producer, faith in God, it could be faith in myself, it could be faith in romantic love, it could be all those things. And he also makes this observation, which has some direct bearing on what we're exploring. He's talking about how the song is written in two parts, and he says this. He says, the first part is about the things I've lost faith in. It's quite easy to be precise about the things I've lost faith in. Politics, media, science, technology, the things that everybody has. And yet, I, along with most other people, have a great deal of hope and a feeling that things will and can get better. So what about part two? What does the songwriter place their hope in? If I ever lose my faith in you. Here's how Sting addresses that question. He says, I don't define it. I think it's important not to define it. And listen, this is his rationale. I think it's important not to define it, because once you define it, because once you define something, it evaporates. I don't define it. I think it's important not to define it, because once you define something, it evaporates. To which I would add, once you define something, you can much more easily weaponize it. You can much more easily use it to measure and to judge and to manipulate others. You can much more easily turn it into a product and sell it, and so on. He goes on to point out the importance of ambiguity in songwriting, the making of space that invites us all to enter the song rather than reacting to it with, well, that's clearly not about me or clearly not for me. In other words, ambiguity, or to use a word that I favor because it feels just like it has more heft to it, it opens into something bigger. Mystery is the word that I like better. Mystery keeps us leaning in. It keeps us open. It keeps us exploring. It even keeps us hopeful. Once we put, and this is important to try to nuance, at least in my thinking, once we put a non-negotiable definition on what we've placed our hope in, we can find ourselves bound to it. There are different ways to define things. We know what it's like to define something contextually or situationally, as opposed to defining it in a way that is an attempt to make it to make it universal, to make it non-negotiable. And once we place a non-negotiable definition on something, we can find ourselves bound to it, which can feel fine as long as whatever it is keeps working for us. and working for most of the world we find ourselves in. But when it stops working, and we've been treating the definition as non-negotiable, we are in for a world of hurt. And this isn't just about things like religious ideas. This is pretty broadly applicable. We can feel it happening around us all kinds of categories these days, right? Myriad assumptions about how the world works that are in the state of change. Everything from health to economics to politics and, of course, religion. There is something very appealing, at least to me, about that whole realm of mystery and the ill-defined. I feel welcome there. I feel invited in there. I feel embraced by what is unclear much more warmly than I ever was by certainty. I know that's not everyone's experience, and I want to suggest that there's a big reason for that. One of the reasons that we're feeling adrift these days is because we've lost what many would call common ground. It's an idea that has its roots in ancient Greek thinking about the polis, about the people, the citizenry. It sort of starts with Plato and then Socrates builds on it. We don't have a shared story of you. We don't have a you in which we collectively place our faith. There's no longer a binding narrative, a shared big story that is widely accepted as the basis for understanding or making meaning of the world. I feel like I should add, before I continue down this path, that binding narratives or meta-narratives have never been universal. They have sometimes been treated as if or spoken of as though they were, and sometimes they've been perpetuated with enough power, with enough force and resources to look as though they were. But all we have to do to see that that isn't the case and has never been the case is listen to whoever was or is on the margins of the prevailing norms who got steamrolled by them. And we'll promptly hear about the way the world works and looks differently for different people. I was sort of reflecting on this morning when I was reviewing my definition of polis, of the root of the idea of politics, of citizens working together for something, and of common good. And I was thinking about the thinkers, the Greek thinkers, who perpetuated these ideas that are still so strong that they form much of the basis of the way our society operates in the Western world. They were all men. And in fact, the voting citizenry in these ideas, practically speaking, were all men. And that was so hegemonic, that was so thoroughly the case, that to find the voices from any other perspective in terms of gender is, while not impossible, extraordinarily difficult and doesn't tend to come to the surface. That in itself is fascinating. So when I talk about some of these ideas that I'm going to explore over the next while, I think that's an important thing to keep in mind, and I'll continue to try to find some of those other voices as I go. But it's that pervasive that we would say things like Western idea or Western thought and not pause to say Western male thought, because that's part of the context as well. So not universal is the point. That said, there have been periods in history, especially in European and Western history in general, where there has been something more like a shared story, and where that shared story has been predominantly grounded in what we might broadly call, and I very broadly and with air quotes writ large, a Christian worldview. There have been periods, much shorter ones, but very assertive and impacting in many cases, in which the most widely held binding narratives or common stories have been things like science or progress or industry or democracy and so on. And we really don't have to look very hard to see that while all those narratives are still around and they all have adherence and we all kind of still have this tendency, we dip in and out of them as it suits us to do so, while that's all true, none of them has the kind of cultural clout to really provide a shared story that answers the question, who or what do you place your faith in for the collective? Increasingly, there is no common ground. And one of the easily visible results has been the disintegration of civil discourse. That's the 7-year-olds in the schoolyard thing that I was talking about earlier. I'm gonna just sort of flat out say this is a big deal. This is a significant problem. When people that share life in a country and a culture don't know how to gather and listen to one another and have civil debate and move through that debate process to make up our minds together and choose a course of action, that's a big deal. We are surrounded by uncivil conversation for lots of reasons, but one of the big ones is that we don't seem to have a story that is bigger than our personal preferences to guide us when we disagree. And to be clear, I am not talking about having a religious story in common. I think religion is a significant layer in this consideration, but I don't think it's the deepest one. We need some common ground that invites people of all religions and of no religion to have civil conversations with one another. So, here's a question for us to muse on as we head into our week, as we watch the events of the world unfold around us and as we participate in their unfolding. Is there anything that we can gather around that doesn't evaporate as soon as we define it, or get easily turned into yet another thing that we can use to clobber one another? Is there anything that we can gather around that doesn't evaporate as soon as we define it, or get easily turned into yet another thing that we can use to clobber one another? That's what I want to see if I can help us explore together over the next little while. I don't know that we will come to any sort of aha conclusions. I'm not even sure that's a good goal. Kind of an appealing one, though, isn't it? Especially if we all agreed and, you know, could tell everybody else why they're wrong. See the problem? It's right there. Anyway, my hope is that we'll encounter some ideas in this exploration that inform our own imaginations and our ways of operating in the world that move us toward together rather than further down the path of apart. Toward whatever it is that we would say operates in profoundly different ways than polarization does. That's what I want to explore. I hope we can do that together. My thoughts are with you all as we try to find our way through the feelings and the facts of a more restrictive period in our response to the pandemic in terms of public health guidelines. I hope that those restrictions do not constrain our spirits or our imaginations, even though they do constrain our movements. All right. Peace to you all. We'll chat again soon. Bye for now.